With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Tara Reid and Sasha Koshernikova on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, everyone. This is Sasha, and Tara will join us soon on TNT Radio. And happy Tuesday. We are in the very beginning of this week and the whole September. I hope you have a great plans for this month. And thanks for listening to our show in different time zones, probably in different mood also, and always supporting us with your feedback. Thanks a lot. And today, as per usual, we will have interesting topics to discuss and special guests. And today we have an even two guests on a show, and we will introduce them very, very soon. But before that part, I just wanted to say a couple of words about current events. What we're talking about now here in Russia, this is Russian athletes on international competitions. So Russians and Belarusian swimmers were finally allowed to participate in international competitions, but with their hands tied. It means on a very wild terms, singly and without the right to speak. It sounds like a real humiliation. And do we really need to accept it? The criteria agreed by International Aquatics Federation for admission of athletes from Russia to international competitions are strict and fair. It's not my words. It's opinion of the head of the organization. He also thanks all those involved for all possible assistance in creating a competitive, fair, and inclusive environment for each participant of the competition. Let's look in details what are these new rules for Russian and Belarusian athletes are. In the 7-page regulations, everything is painted according to the points: neutral status without a flag, national anthem, and other signs indicating belonging to the country. Only white uniforms and logo of the organization. Only individual competitions. That means no teams and no relays. Therefore, our synchronized swimmers who have no equal in any competitions, as well as water polo players, won't have no opportunity. Will have no opportunity to take part in competitions at all. In addition, only one participant from Russia will be allowed to take part in each discipline. At the same time, athletes should not show support for their special military operation, obviously. They are forbidden to go to press conferences even, so they can't even speak. They can't communicate with journalists and even appear in mixed zone. Fans are already even joking on social networks about that. If our athletes behave well, they will even get water poured into the pool. And who knows, maybe this will be the new rule that appear the day before the competition. And we all know this is not the first time when our athletes were discriminated in different types of sport, and this fight with using sport as a tool in policy has deep roots. We shouldn't stop and take it just as it is, because today it's Russian athletes and Belarusian athletes. Who knows which country will be the next if political climate change. And on the level of just simple citizens, me and my volunteers team, we were supporting our athletes during the last Olympics, the previous one. We literally were sleeping at the airport here in Moscow. That was our duty, to meet Russian athletes with national anthem and flag, which was prohibited during Olympics. We were trying to give all our support, all our energy when they were coming back. And they brought us a lot of medals and good results, and our support helped them, as they said. And now almost 70% of international respondents voted for the return of Russians and Belarusian swimmers, stressing that without our athletes, competitions lose their meaning. Now it remains to wait for the response of the Russian Swimming Federation. So if this topic touched your heart somehow, or you can always share your opinion using our website, it will be really nice to hear something from you about that. Or perhaps you have a guest who would love to be on our show, and then we want to hear from you too. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website and help us make a difference here on TNT Radio.
World News reported right.
I try to find news outlets that aren't too biased.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are back, and as I promised, today we have two guests during the show, and now it's a pleasure for me to introduce our first guest. She's joining us right now, president of the Unified Coordination Center for the Support of Compatriots Abroad, international human rights activist, writer, and publicist. This is Mira Tirada. We're really glad to have you here as a guest on the show. How are you today?
Hello. Thank you for having me over.
Oh, I heard a lot about your work, but I want our listeners now to see it in a few words. I would love you to describe your work and maybe tell us what was your own ideas, your own goals to start working in this very, I would love to say, difficult sphere.
Well, I also am the head of the Foundation to Battle Injustice that works currently on protecting children's rights. And it's been over a year since I'm working on behalf of children, and lately our main focus is on children that are in war zones or being taken from the war zones against their parents' will, and children immigrants that are taken from their parents in the countries where they arrive.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to ask you about the current investigations that you had, because I know that one of these even went further and reached the UN. Can you talk about that?
Well, yeah, there is an investigation about 85 children that have been taken from Artemovsky region, which is Donetsk People Republic region. And at the beginning of special military operation, like a month later, the orphanage house received a letter from one Spanish NGO, and the member of this NGO was telling that they're able to take up to 100 children to Spain until the situation is better in DPR. So later on, 85 children were taken with the supervisor from this orphan house to Poland, and from Poland they were picked up by the military aircraft and taken to Spain. In Spain, for the first few months, everything was okay until there was involved the police officer, the pastor from religious organization, and two other NGOs. One is from Argentina called Milagros del Corazon, and one is from United States. The name of that NGO is Angels. So when they got involved, unfortunately, the guardianship by the supervisor of children was removed and given to Spanish NGO. And after that, the violation of children's rights started. Because according to the international law, you're not supposed to separate brothers and sisters, for example, and they were separated. They were taken to four different organizations, which looked more as of children prisons than actual orphan houses. And they were very close to marginal groups, and children were, they started having access to the drugs, and there were sexual assaults that led to pregnancies, and then girls were forced to have an abortions. We kept tracing these children, and we found out when the guardianship was passed from Ukrainian woman to the Spanish organization, 8 children got missing. So because there were 85 of them, but then when we see the copy of the paper of guardianship, we see only 77. When we published our investigation, Spanish social services of Castilla de Leon, they gave an interview to one of the Spanish media and said that 8 children are not missing. They reached the age of 18. And I checked the papers. None of the children reached that age at that moment. And what our listeners need to know that those children are with special needs, meaning that they have to be guarded. They have to have guardianship till the rest of their life. And then we were able to track some children down, and they were taken to United States and to Argentina with the help of this organization that was involved in their transfer, Milagros del Corazon. After our investigation was published, Milagros del Corazon found out about it and started cleaning up their website, because they probably forgot that internet remembers everything. And we were able to restore their action and even could tell on what date they applied those changes. Of course, we made copies of this information and passed it along with other evidence to the UN and other ministries, such as Ministry of Foreign Affairs and other institutions and special services in Russia and international as well. And basically what they did, they erased information from their website. For example, they had a program which is absolutely like disgusting and terrific and horrible. You could take a child for $3,500 to your house, to your home, for the amount of time, like 3 to 4 weeks. And then you could buy a child for $18,000, you know, and the child with special needs. And if the child has better health conditions, then the price could raise up twice, three times more. So that information was also erased, and they wrote that such program was closed. And then they applied some other changes. But completely disgusting about all this story, because we tried to flip the story and look at it from different angles and see, like, why would they take money for children? And maybe that was donation. But like, we know that if it's donation, it's it should be willingly and as much as you can. When you see the subject of the deal, which is a child at this moment, unfortunately, and when you see the actual price for the subject, you know, then you know that it's definitely the sale deal is happening here.
Actually, it's even even to hear this, it's awful, because I know that now our audience is all around the world, and everyone now maybe compare this situation to something that we have in other international space. But it's always the question, how can you, with your investigation, with your team who is working on that and doing really a great job, how can you affect on this situation? How can you change it and stop it? So what helped you, first of all, to reach these people, to reach other countries and other sides of this story?
What can help is actually to keep people informed and not to be silenced about the subject, because that's the issue. People think that living in 21st century, that means slavery is gone. Slavery cannot be at the current times. And unfortunately, they're completely wrong. This is the actual time for children trafficking, because with all the pandemics around the world, with all the high level of immigrants from all over the world, with war conflicts all over the world, there is also human trafficking increases, including children trafficking. So of course, information is our first weapon in this fight. And our partners all over the world that are doing this job, some of them already for decades, that are being like our eyes and ears and hands with some things that cannot be done by us from here, we do it cooperating together. And that's a lot of help.
Oh, so you actually build a net of the same people who have the same thoughts, who are trying to fight with you all together as a team. That's really something that nowadays we really shall maybe count more on, communities of the same people around the world. And now we're just going to take a short break and continue this conversation with Mira Tirada on TNT Radio in a few seconds.
You should hear what James Freeman is talking about on the Freeman Report.
It seems that the launch of the ultra low emission zone expansion yesterday was a public relations disaster. Looking at social media, I see that the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, is doing his very best to defend the scheme, because by the looks of the number of interviews he's doing, he's not doing much else at the moment. But it's not looking good for him or ULEZ. In fact, I'm not sure how it could be worse right now for him, to be honest with you, bar him having to cancel the whole thing. The Transport for London online number plate checker for motorists to use to see if their vehicles are compliant, well, that crashed yesterday. More cameras have been vandalised by the Blade Runners, and councils that border the expanded charge zones are refusing to erect signs warning drivers they're about to enter a charging zone. A brilliant excuse to have the fines cancelled, if anybody gets any. And also, drivers are using stickers and false number plates so that the number plate cameras cannot identify their vehicles. The best example I've seen so far is a number plate titled FCK ULEZ.
The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
You're with Sasha Koshernikova and Tara Reid on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And you are indeed on TNT with Tara Reid, that's me, and Sasha. And Mira Tirada has joined us, having a fascinating discussion about her recent investigation into child trafficking that happened in the Donetsk region over into Spain and worldwide. So Mira, I wanted to pick up where Sasha left off a bit. You know, there's been a lot of stories about, journalistic stories, meaning investigations, about Ukraine being a hub of human trafficking, even organ trafficking, human organ trafficking. So pretty dire stuff. It was, you know, even 5 years ago, it was called the most corrupt country in the world. I think we can all agree Ukraine is number one in corruption. I wanted to know what your opinion was with some of the other cases touching this, with the child abductions, with the trafficking. Is this labor trafficking? Is it sexual trafficking? What kind of trafficking have you been seeing this happening?
Thank you for this question. It's not only my opinion, it's because I work with the victims and witnesses. My opinion is based on what they are telling me. And the absolutely bizarre story I heard from one family who is from Artyomovsk, used to be called Bakhmut City. And they've been telling me that December last year, right before the Christmas, there were many volunteers that came to that town. And, you know, the conflict was there already for about 8 months, and there were no humanitarian aid for whatsoever for all that time. But right before the Christmas, the volunteer come, and they come with the presents only for the children. And they say that you can receive those presents only if you bring your child with you, or if you bring birth certificate with you. And when once you do that, they take a picture of the child or of the birth certificate, and they ask where they live, and ask where they hide when there is a shelling happens, what basements they're in, and so on. And then a week later, everyone was gone, and like, you know, just some short amount of time later, those people, they come back, but they already, like one lady who was that humanitarian aid, she already dressed up in a uniform, and they came on that car where it says White Angels. There is another military group called Phoenix. Those are two military groups that we are aware of that are going around and picking up children. There is an official explanation in Ukraine over their action. They say that they are evacuating those children, but this is not how evacuation should be happening. First of all, it should be happening with the permission of the parents, but when you point the gun at the parents and then against their will and against the child's will you take their children, this is already abduction. This is not the evacuation. So when those military groups came back to Artyomovsk, they had the written plan of the town with the buildings where children were at, which floor are they on, which basement they are hiding, what's their name, and so on. We had a story of girl, her name is Melania, she's 11 years old. She was evacuating from the different city and was separated with her mother. She went with her grandparents. So when White Angels came after her, they said, your mother was murdered. And your relatives in Germany are waiting for you. We are here to pick you up. And they were trying to take her. And she had to hide for many, many months. And they were going after her. And another thing, when you go to evacuate children, you don't pick up only, for example, children of the age from 11 till 13, white, blue eyes and blonde hair. You know, it seemed like they had some credentials that they're using to pick those children up. And what they do with those children, of course, it's organ trafficking, which is the worst. Of course, it's sexual trafficking for the pedophiles. Children can be used as an actual, you know, interference with men or women sexually, but also it can be an online, you know, pornography. It can be the behind camera usage, how they use children for all types of reason. It can be any kind of different criminal schemes. You know, it can be drugs trafficking. It can be also begging on the streets, which is also a part of the criminal structures. It can be all types of work, you know, work at the farms, work in the fields, and so on. So with this time when we have, as I mentioned earlier, all this conflicts, you know, military conflicts going on, all types of pandemics, high level of immigration. We understand that human trafficking is growing up, the market is growing up, and unfortunately the ways how they want to use those children are also, you know, every day just different. You will hear stories that you'd never, you know, you would never think of the child can be used, like, and I'm not even talking about things such as religious sacrifices and other, the weirdest and ugliest things that only human mind can create, you know, affected by the evil, probably.
Well, I know our audience is moved by this and this report that's happened, and it looks like a lot is going on with trafficking from Ukraine and Europe, and frankly, all over the world. We've had conversations with other advocates and activists on this topic. Could you tell our audience, before we have to take a break and we have to move on to our next guest, where they can find your work, Mira, and how they can help?
Our work related to the children trafficking can be found on our website. It's fontfbr.ru. I will spell it. It's F as a fox, O as an open, N as a Nancy, D as a dog, F as a fox, B as a box, R as a rabbit, .r as a rabbit, U as united. And there is a contact form where you can contact us. And I'm just asking everyone to be aware and alert, because only together we can stand up against this issue.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, this is really a startling and stunning report. And, you know, I hope that there's justice for these 85 children and that the special needs children are all recovered and able to come through their trauma and, you know, safely in family arms, you know. So thank you for all your work. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me over, and thank you for your caring heart.
Okay. You take care, Mira. And we're going to take a quick news break. And when we come back, we'll have the CIA whistleblower, Larry Johnson. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Now, where trusted newscasters deliver the day's news at the same reliable time.
TNT Radio News.
That sounds awesome.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin will reportedly meet face-to-face with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un later this month to discuss a potential weapons deal. Ukraine's SAC defense minister has revealed the country is spending around $100 million a day on its war with Russia. And Elon Musk has upped the ante in his feud with the Anti-Defamation League, suggesting he may have to sue the Jewish civil rights group for trying to destroy X through fraudulent claims of anti-Semitism.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with TNT Radio. This is your host, Tara Reid, and Sasha has joined us. We had a really meaningful conversation with Mira Tirada, the battle against injustice, about the child human trafficking that's been going on and organ trafficking in Ukraine, and some startling statistics and information and how that case is going to the UN. And now we have another guest joining us in our new format, because we're going video soon here and we're testing that all out. And we're also going to be having two guests per show every day, Monday through Friday. So join us for that. And Larry Johnson is a very well-known speaker, geopolitical analyst, and also he is a whistleblower himself and worked in American intelligence formerly. Has done a lot to bring forth truth. And you'll be happy to hear what he has to say today. Larry Johnson, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tara. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm better. I'm in Moscow, Russia, and not in solitary confinement in the U.S.
some sanctuary.
Yes, I have sanctuary and safety. I have a temporary asylum. So about your, and you know, the audience that follows us knows my story. And I know you've, had quite some harrowing experiences with, the U.S. government. If you want to just tell the audience a little bit about who you are and your background, that would be great. Start that way.
Well, sure. I spent 4 years with the Central Intelligence Agency in the 1980s. I worked on both the operations side and the intelligence side of the house. I was the lead analyst for the Central America during the Contra Wars. I then moved down to State Department's Office of Counterterrorism. I was there for 4 years. When I left the U.S. government in 1993, I began a consulting business that included spending 23 years working with U.S. military special operations forces. So I have a pretty unique background, because I worked with the FBI, I worked with the U.S. military's special operations guys, I worked with all transportation security, and of course, CIA and State Department. So I have sort of a good understanding of how policy, intelligence, and military come together.
Well, with that background, we're in quite a historical moment And I'm sure you hear a lot of the content on TNT. We try to push back on the, you know, on the narrative that's come out of the State Department. And you've been a very outspoken voice against the proxy war that the U.S. and NATO is fighting against Russia via Ukraine. Could you take us right now to where we are in this moment? You're seeing articles pop up about wanting to attack Crimea and wanting to, you know, that the U.S. wants to attack Crimea and things like that. And a lot of false flag operations trying to get off the ground. What is your assessment of where we are? Is the American and NATO, are they desperate or are they just grinding along to draw this out as long as they can to make money?
No, they're desperate and they don't know what to do. Look, this entire adventure, the attempt to destroy Russia, started with the presumption that the Ukrainian military, which the West had built up and trained, would be effective in defeating Russia. If you look at it at the start of the special military operation a year ago, February, the Ukrainian military, even though it was not an official member of NATO, it was, in fact, a de facto member of NATO. And as such, its army represented the second largest army in NATO after that of the United States. So that's what made it so significant. And all of the hopes and dreams of the West are going up in flames. They really did anticipate that Russia would be unable to respond. They genuinely believe that Russia's military leadership is incompetent, that the military forces were conscripted and had low morale and poor training to boot, that Russia did not have an effective logistics capability to keep those troops sustained in the field, that Russia's weapons were inadequate, insufficient. And so all that needed to be done was apply a little bit of pressure, economic pressure, on by imposing sanctions that would have destroyed the Russian economy and also would fragment the military because it would not be able to resist this NATO-trained force. All of that has gone up in smoke, completely wrong.
And I can speak to sanctions directly because I am in Moscow, Russia, as an American. And yeah, there's a few Western stores that are no longer here. But Russians are doing fine. Their economy is booming. It's a beautiful city. It's very efficient. It's very clean. There's a thriving middle class, which is what I really think. And I want to ask you this question. My assessment of a lot of the propaganda, besides obviously pushing the war, right? But the anti, you know, Russian propaganda is based on economics. I really believe that the U.S., you know, that the Biden regime in charge now in particular, but Republicans as well, do not want people to know how successful Russia is in its current system and how thriving the middle class is. In other words, there's a middle class, a good one.
Right,
and
right.
People have medical care, education, and pensions, and they have maternity leave paid, and they have job guarantees. It's a very different, there's not that desperate, you talk about desperation. American citizens have been desperate, you know, and yet, you know, and then when there's a disaster like in Maui, it really comes forward because people are left with nothing and no resources and no net. What is your assessment? Is that accurate or do you have a different view?
Well, I don't think it's a deliberate effort on the part of the United States to suppress information. I think it's just more a function, as you know. The average American is just flat out ignorant about international affairs. I don't know if it was Mark Twain or some other one that has been attributed to the statement that war is God's way of teaching Americans about geography. So that they, you know, otherwise they wouldn't know the first thing about Iraq or Ukraine or Russia for that matter. So there's, you know, think about it. If you, when you were back here in the States, if you just asked a person on the street, hey, who's your local congressman or representative in the House of Representatives? Right. Most of them would have no clue. So they have no knowledge about their own government and less knowledge about foreign countries. But you're also correct that the media has not done a very good job of trying to correctly explain what's going on. I know that 60 Minutes did a piece showing shopping in Russian grocery stores, and I have friends who saw it, and they were just blown away. They couldn't believe it because they said, they've got more stuff than we do in our stores, which yes. was not the case. You know, I'm old enough to remember the good old days or bad old days of the Cold War, depending on how you want to look at it. And, you know, in the 1970s, we ridiculed Russia or the then Soviet Union for the not having a wide variety of products. In fact, do you remember the Robin Williams movie, Moscow on the Hudson? You know, yes. They portray this Russian defector and he's just overwhelmed with the choices confronting him. Well, now that's what Russia is. They've got the overwhelming choices, and America is the one suffering from shortages. The irony of it is just profound.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you one more question about that on that note, because you do work with, you know, so extensively with military and intelligence. I wanted to ask you about, you know, you've watched my story unfold. You know that I've sought asylum here. Okay. And there are others like me from Ireland, England, different places that are seeking protection of some sort, or even asylum itself. What is your assessment of the move towards people from the West moving to Moscow, moving to different parts of Russia or China? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a reflection of initially, remember, why people fled Europe and Eastern Europe in particular back in the 1880s and then into the early 20th century to come to America. They were seeking freedom. They were seeking opportunity. They were seeking less government interference and repression. Well, now I've lived long enough to see a complete flip, reversal of the roles. In the 1970s, we made fun of the Soviet leadership because it looked like an escape from a nursing home. You know, you had Brezhnev and Gromyko and Andropov. These are all a bunch of old guys. I mean, their heyday had been during World War II. And it was the geriatric class. Well, hello. Look at what is happening in the United States. You get Mitch McConnell, who looks like he was a frozen statue the other day, asked him a question and his brain completely shut down on him. You've got Joe Biden, in advanced stages of senility. I mean, it's just, you walk down the list, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer. We have become what the Soviet Union was, and not just in terms of having a bunch of elderly political figures, but also in terms of political oppression of opponents, jailing people without due process, political persecution on a massive scale, suppression of information. And, you know, you personally have experienced what it was like that when you try to come out and tell the truth, you become a target of attack. And, you know, those are the kinds of things we saw in the old Soviet Union. You don't see that in Russia today. You see that in the United States. So that's what I mean by this complete role reversal.
Yeah, it is stunning. And it really is. I wanted to bring in my co-host, Sasha, I know she had a couple questions for you. So Sasha, go ahead and join our
conversation. Oh, actually, I just I wanted to stay on this subject while we were talking about Soviet Union, about Russia. When I meet foreigner with I would love to say different point of view than the mainstream Western media. I always love to ask about what are your sources of information? You already mentioned that you have some friends here, as I can guess, but it's really interesting. How do you see us from the other side of the ocean, and where do you take your information from?
Well, I've had a little experience. I back in 1994. I traveled to Kiev. I was the bodyguard for a CIA contractor, a female. So my job was to protect her during that trip, and that was my first exposure And I got to say, what I was shocked by what I had been taught about the nature of the threat that was posed by the Soviet Union. Ukraine was still considered part of Russia at the time. And what I saw on the ground was a complete disconnect from what I had been led to believe, based upon even, you know, leading academic journals and even some of the information provided by the intelligence community. But, you know, over the years, it's just important to read and to look at different sources of information and then to use common sense when things just don't add up. Yeah, and you know, an example was that is the when the story circulated last year that Ukraine defeated Russia and forced the Russian tank columns that were located either 24 miles north of Kiev or 40 miles north of Kiev, that they fled in the face of Ukrainian counterattacks, except at no time did we see any of the imagery that you are seeing now as Ukraine attacks Russian positions and those tanks are blown up. You know, a line of tanks and trucks on a road is the biggest, fattest target you can have if you have good combat air capabilities or artillery or other means to destroy tanks. So none of that was used, and it just led me to ask the question, why? Because if you have to assume that Ukraine wanted to attack and destroy, but the reality was they couldn't because they didn't have the capability. Now, that to me seemed a very obvious point. But when I made it, people were like, oh, you know, that's not true. I said, okay, present to me the actual evidence that shows the Ukraine attacking those tanks. And they couldn't. And in this day and age of social media, it's tough to hide. You know, another example is the whole issue of casualties. I've been saying for quite a while, just on a simple math problem, that the fact that Russia's firing like 10 times the number of artillery shells that Ukraine is, that Ukraine's going to suffer more casualties simply because of the volume, the difference in the volume of fire. Well, yesterday I was shocked. The BBC came out with an article and with a video, and the video is incredible because it makes it very, very clear the enormity of the losses that Ukraine is suffering. It actually reinforces the point. And you can't, in this day of social media, hide things. If Russia was suffering the horrendous level of casualties that's being claimed by Ukraine, I guarantee you that the women, the children, the brothers, the sisters, the mothers, the fathers of those slain soldiers would be posting that information on social media. And you're not seeing that in Russia. You are seeing it in spades in Ukraine. So that's one of the ways I go about assessing information. You have to look at a variety of sources and then ask yourself the simple question, does this make sense?
I really hope that we will have more people the same as you with independent minds and their own experience about Russia and other countries who been treated very opposite way as it is in right. real life by media. And now we're just going to take the last break and back to this deep conversation with Larry Johnson.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Donna Brazile is as experienced a Democrat hand as there is out there. She was campaign manager for Alger in 2000. She's twice served as acting head of the Democrat National Committee. And she will tell whatever lie happens to benefit the Democrats most at any particular point, like when she told ABC's George Stephanopoulos today that Biden's policies are helping Americans and making American lives better. But Donna's no fool. Later in the program, she said that that she's seen three political movements in her lifetime: Ronald Reagan's, Barack Obama's, and Donald Trump's. And she said she's never seen anything like the Trump America First movement. And that's because it's about we the people. It's us turning the tables on them. Donna also astutely pointed out to The Hill this week that Democrats have lost their hold on Black and Hispanic voters, and that getting them back into the fold should be the number one priority for the Democrat Party. Donna, I hate to break it to you, but once you lose Black, they never go back. Good luck getting them to unsee what they've already seen. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
How was your drive to school?
Let me tell you. I had to get my iced coffee first. I just can't seem to put it down. My favorite rapper just announced a tour. My phone was buzzing like crazy. I'm so excited. I had to text all my friends right then to talk about it. Then someone started calling me and...
Let's try that again.
I turned my phone off right away. I never drive distracted.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Sasha Koshernikova and Tara Reid on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. And we're having a fascinating discussion with Larry Johnson and a former CIA intelligence officer and also a whistleblower about just some of the things that are being done with the corruption and the weaponization of DOJ and the FBI against U.S. citizens, and also basically imperialism in general and by the U.S. And, you know, I wanted to ask a follow-up question, and it's a very blunt one. It's based on my own kind of geopolitical analysis and experience working with some of the people that, you know, we're talking about, because I, as you know, worked for Joe Biden and for Leon Panetta and others. My experience was that, unfortunately, it's the people behind the scenes that we don't see in the media. They're the ones kind of creating policy. And, you know, like the Ted Kaufmans, the Jake Sullivans, the Victoria Nulands, but even behind them, and of course, in the intelligence services. And one of my concerns is the absolute focus on trying to bring down Russia, and also the absolute focus on thinking that it's even remotely possible to have a limited nuclear war. Now, in Russia, they don't, you know, it's illegal, you know, the preemptive strike, the whole thing, only under certain conditions would that happen. They are not even entertaining it. They've made it very clear. President Putin over and over has said, if there was a war like that, no one would win. He said it in the Oliver Stone interviews. He has said it again publicly, again and again. He doesn't want a war with the West. Now, the U.S., you get very different rhetoric and very scary. So this concept of limited nuclear war is what I've been hearing about. What are we going to, and are the predictions that we may be facing a third world war in the spring of 2024? Is that something to be afraid of? Is that something that citizens need to know about? What is your assessment of the information you're receiving?
Yeah, no. I think it's a very real possibility. This is the most frightening time in my life. You know, I was born in 1955, so I was 7 years old during the first the Cuban Missile Crisis, where the United States and the then Soviet Union came close to exchanging nuclear weapons. The difference now is the complete miscalculation, complete delusion in the West. We still believe that we're on equal footing with Russia, and that if push comes to shove, that with our nuclear capability, we would easily defeat and destroy Russia. There are people that believe that nonsense. What they're failing to take into account is that, thanks to George W. Bush, the United States abandoned the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty in the summer of 2001, I believe. And as a result of that, abandoned efforts to prevent the development of defense systems that could shoot down ballistic missiles. Well, Russia initially protested that. I mean, Putin thought it was, he wanted to stay in the agreement. United States basically told him to pound sand. So Russia embarked on a program where they actually built anti-ballistic missile defense systems. They've now deployed the S-500 and I believe the S-550. The S-550 is capable of shooting down any missile that comes from outer space, as well as dealing with space threats. So Russia is now actually in a position that in the event, and again, I want to emphasize, it is unlikely that I do not believe Russia will initiate this, but in the event that the situation develops to the point of having to use nuclear weapons, that Russia would be well prepared to defeat at least the majority of the threat from the West. And by contrast, the United States, UK, Europe, none of them have any kind of defensive system whatsoever against that anti-ballistic missile. So that's one of the things that worries me. Go ahead.
I thought Israel had something. No.
The okay. Iron Dome. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just no.
See, and this is propaganda that it's good for our audience to clear it up. I'm glad you brought this up. So go on with what you're saying. So what does
what this leads to is when you miscalculate the capabilities of your opponent by underestimating them or pretending that they do not have the ability to hurt you, you're going to get yourself in a world of trouble. This is like someone believing that they've never engaged with martial arts. They've never taken a single boxing class. They've watched it on television and convinced themselves, and they weigh 100, let's say they weigh maybe 70 kilos. And now they've decided, oh, I bet you I could beat up Mike Tyson. I could fight Mike Tyson. Well, you can believe that. But if you try to do it, you're going to get a rude awakening as reality punches you in the face. And that's sort of what we're facing right now, that this I can't emphasize enough to your audience that the U.S., the leadership of the U.S. intelligence community and the U.S. military, including people like Lloyd Austin and Mark Milley, they genuinely believe, they sincerely believe, it's not a put on, that Russia's military is inadequate, is poor, is filled with conscripts with low morale, and that it's incompetent. They genuinely believe that. That's not just talking points that they're putting out. And
so they believe their own propaganda.
They believe their own propaganda. And, part of that, I can say I blame Russia in part for that, because when Russia allows these various American ISR platforms, the intelligence surveillance reconnaissance drones, to fly in the Black Sea, on the one hand, it's Putin upholding international law. He's not going to attack something that's in international airspace. And it's his adherence to international legal principles that really sets him apart among international leaders. But what the United States does is they assume that just because those are allowed to fly unfettered and the intelligence that they collect is being used to launch attacks inside Russia, that the West concludes Russia is weak and can't do anything to stop it. And I think what's going to happen is they're going to become more provocative in their actions. And at some point, Russia's patience is going to run out and they'll shoot them down. And then at that point, the West is going to be, okay, now what do we do? Because they have no other way to escalate apart from threatening to use nuclear weapons.
So that leads us to this, because we have a little bit of time left. How can people find you and hear more of your wisdom? Because you have a lot to say. And it's really interesting and fascinating. Where can our audience find you and listen to you?
I write at sonar21.com, S-O-N-A-R. 21.com. That stands for Son of the New American Revolution, 21st Century. I use that tag because I have 28 ancestors that fought in the American Revolution, in 1776 and after. So I come out of this from, if you will, the heritage of revolutionaries who fought for freedom and fought to uphold individual liberty. And I'm still committed to that.
And I think it's to your credit that you're trying to help fellow American citizens know the truth. And that's a true patriot. You're not answering to politics or to a blob, the military industrial complex. You're answering to the need to tell the truth. So thank you. Thank you, Larry, so much for all of that you've done.
Thank you, Tara, for having me, and you have a great day.
You too. And I want to thank the audience for joining us today, and we'll be back tomorrow with two guests. And as we move forward during the week with more to discuss, you've been listening to TNT Radio.